Good morning and welcome to our Halloween edition of the roundtable panel. I don't know. Is there such a thing as
Will it be scarier than usual? Because...
I don't know.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's... you want to be...
Yeah, nice. I'm dressed up as a washed-up broadcaster.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah. Well, Alan's looking good today. He has the he has a black suit on and with a sort of like a Blues Brothers look.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, you look good. I like the makeup around the eyelashes. It's good.
I'm invisible.
It's gonna be one of those days.
Well, Ray Graff is here, Alan Chartok is here, and our good friend Ken Lovett joins us as well. And Ken, what are you dressed up as today?
Oh, I'm dressed up as a working man.
Yeah.
All right.
Jeans and a sweater.
Well, is that the gear of a working man?
Yeah,
jeans and a sweater.
Depends on where you're working, obviously.
I thought that was
at
just
the capital. It is.
Yeah, I guess so. Ken Lovett is Albany bureau chief and columnist for the New York Daily News, and it's a pleasure to have him on the program. We wanted Ken on the show today to talk about midterm elections and where we are, and we're going to try to. And I know there's a lot, but we're going to try to have an Ebola-free hour.
Well, all right. I think I'll take a bike ride.
I could take off my plastic bubble then.
Yeah, sure you could.
Absolutely.
That's part of your costume.
Goes with the sweater and the jeans.
It does.
Yes. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So, Alan, and you can take this in any direction that you want to take it in, as far as whether you want to look nationally or locally or both. But as we sit here on the Friday before the midterms on Tuesday, where do you think we are? What picture would you paint of these contests?
Well, you know, I get into trouble every time I start painting because first of all, I'm a bad artist. And second of all, when I say something, somebody takes it as my being for that something. Are you following?
Mm-hmm.
So that, for example, I said the other day, along with almost every other political analyst in the country, I think that the Senate looks like it's going to go Republican. And I got a nasty gram from a lady who said, "You're making it happen. That's what you want to have happen. It's just, you're irresponsible." That's unbelievable. But, you know, it does look to me like the Senate is going to go Republican. And unless something extraordinary happens, and it happens every once in a while, you know, that's going to mean big trouble for Barack Obama, whose hair is already light gray. It's going to get dark gray afterwards. And I wouldn't be surprised to see his opposition, as they have in the past, some of the more irresponsible ones talking about impeachment and everything else. They're going to make his life living hell. I don't think there's any way around that. As far as some of the local congressional races, they are very interesting. It does look like Chris Gibson is doing pretty well, according to the polls, more than 20 points ahead, substantially more than 20 points ahead of Sean Eldridge, and a very close race down there in the lower Hudson Valley, where Nan Hayworth and Sean Patrick Maloney are in a very close contest. But it looks like this could be a Republican year.
Ken, I'll ask you the same question with just one little twist, which is, as we can certainly talk about the gubernatorial race and obviously what you've been covering and working out of the Capitol, but do you see what has the correlation been between the governor, who is widely expected to win re-election, and the administration's concerns, and if not concerns, at least input in these other key races in New York State?
Well, I first of all, I agree with Alan. I do think the Senate is going to go Republican. It just seems that way. I think it will make Barack Obama, if he's not already a lame duck, an even more, a lamer duck, I guess, for the next 2 years. Congressional race I want to point out is the one on Staten Island, where it looks like Michael Grimm could probably beat Dominic Recchia, the Democrat. Now, Michael Grimm is under indictment, and he still could possibly win, and that should tell you what kind of year it is. As for the governor, you know, the governor is going to cruise to victory, but if if upstate congressional candidates do well, that's going to have a big impact on the Senate, the state Senate races. And, you know, there's a battle to for control of the Senate. The Democrats were hoping to take it this year, and it looks like, according to polls, it's going to be extremely close, and a lot of people think the Republicans amazingly might hold on. And the governor in a lot of these key areas where the races are in play is not so popular. You know, the polls show Rob Astorino either leading him or very close in a lot of these tight upstate races, and the governor has been nowhere to be seen. He hasn't campaigned for anyone on the Senate trail. He hasn't, he's put out a couple of paper endorsements, but he's really, after promising to help turn the Senate to the Democrats, you know, in order to win the Working Families Party, endorsement, he has really turned his back on that and done very little to help with the effort.
Let me go just a little bit further, if I may, Joe, on that one. You know, there are many of us who have suspected for a long time that, like his father Mario, Andrew Cuomo loves the idea of a Republican Senate because he's fairly conservative on fiscal issues, and you know, he can always blame the Senate as the boogeyman, the guys who won't let him do what he wants to do, and that allegedly pacifies some people on the left. But what's happening in this election, which is very interesting, is I think people have caught on to the game that he doesn't really want. really want a Democratic Senate, and therefore they're angry. And part of that anger is that Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate, is running very, very well, 9 and 10%, and I'm betting he gets even a little higher than that. And if that happens, Cuomo will really be in a bad spot. We have talked about this before, but what will end up happening is that he will trail the statewide Democrats, Tom DiNapoli and Eric Schneiderman, and that isn't going to make this guy happy, I can tell you right now, if the Green Party does extremely well. And the Working Party's family, by the way, which didn't endorse Teach Out, is now, I think, having some buyer's remorse because they might not even get the 50,000 votes they need to get on the ballot.
Well, and I've never seen anything like this before, where the Working Families Party, the governor at one of our at our editorial board meeting with the Daily News earlier this week, made some comments about schools, and he said they're really, you know, the public schools are the, you know, the one of the only remaining public monopolies. He said he wants even more tougher teacher standards that he's going to push for in a second term. And, you know, it ignited a firestorm, especially, you know, a couple of days before the election. And the Working Families Party actually chastised him for his comments, and he's their candidate. And they put out and said, well, we agreed to endorse him because of his, you know, positions on minimum wage and some of the other issues, campaign finance reform, but we don't agree with him here. And now they're sending out letters to all their supporters begging them, saying, you know, even if you don't like the governor, please vote for him on the Working Families Party line, because the governor is looking to kill them. He's sending out emails saying, please vote for me on the Women's Equality Party line. He wants to kill the Working Families Party. They made him grovel for the endorsement, and now he's trying to get even.
Yeah.
So, which is certainly very out of character for this governor. So, what I want to go back to what that means for the other candidates who are running in tight races of nowhere to be seen, because they're kind of the collateral damage in that revenge scheme, aren't they, Ken?
Well, I mean, the reality is the statewides are fine. You know, Schneiderman is going to, you know, the polls show he's up by 20. We'll see. A lot of people thought that would, in the end, be the closest race. DiNapoli really doesn't have a race. So then you look at the upstate Senate races, and certainly it's going to come down to, right now, probably three, maybe four key races. One in Buffalo, where the governor hasn't even endorsed the Democrat. You've got a weird situation there where you have a Republican candidate, an independent candidate who's the incumbent, Mark Grisanti, who is a Republican but lost the primary, and the governor really supports him. And then you've got, you know, the Democratic candidate who the governor has not supported. So that's a key race. There's two races in the Hudson Valley involving Senator Terry Gibson, the Democrat, and Justin Wagner, who's a Democrat. And those races are very very close, but those three are expected to determine the fate of the Senate. C.C. Katchick is another one on the outside, although a lot of Democrats now are starting to feel that they're not going to win that seat. Obviously, it's close and anything could happen, but really they're looking at the two Hudson Valley and the Buffalo seats as the key to winning this thing. Governor is popular in Buffalo, but he's not using his might on that. He's not, campaigning for the Democrat. As a matter of fact, he not only is not campaigning for the Democrat, he ripped a mailer from the teachers union that was a negative mailer against Grisanti. So he actually stood up and defended Grisanti. And the Hudson Valley ones, he's endorsed the guys, but he's done nothing beyond that.
Yeah, and across the – and Joe, just one mention.
Sure.
In my home state of Massachusetts, there's a lot at stake here, but it does look like Martha Coakley is going to have a very rough time becoming the governor of the state, and it may well be that there's a rejection of the gambling amendment that people insisted they have a right to vote on, and it might be that that goes down too. So some very interesting things happening in Massachusetts.
The brand new poll from the Western New England University poll, which is out this morning, came out at 9 o'clock, has Baker up 46 to 41 on Martha.
What's the margin of error on that?
I think it's 3%.
So that's a very close race.
Well, yeah, but it's a blue state Republican, blue state Democratic area, you have the Republican leading, and Martha Coakley. We had her on the air. We've had him on the air, Charlie Baker. It is amazing. But Democrats in an independents in Massachusetts often, just to teach the Democrats a lesson, will vote Republican.
Yeah, they voted for Mitt Romney, and Coakley, by a lot of Democrats right now, especially if she loses this race, has the reputation of snagging defeat from the jaws of victory. This is going to be the second time it happens to her, where she went in as the overwhelming favorite and could lose.
And you know what, Ken? People are holding her responsible. They're mad at her, and that's one of the reasons they're saying they're not voting for her, because she lost the last time. That's amazing.
As to the ballot initiative that seeks a repeal to repeal a state law that authorizes licensing up to three casinos in Massachusetts, according to the poll out, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, 59% saying they would vote no on the question, 35% saying they would vote yes, which I think goes along with the mood of the room. Right, Alan?
Well, you have to define what yes and no means, because a lot of people get confused by that.
Well, they would vote no on the question. 35% say they would vote yes on the question.
The question being that, do you want to repeal this?
Yes. They would authorize licensing up to three casinos in Massachusetts to repeal, yes.
Yeah, well, what do you make of that, Ray? You've often, that's been on your beat, the gambling beat.
The gambling beat? Well,
Yeah.
It's a pretty big margin at this time. I mean, it looks like those in Massachusetts are in favor of it, but who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a big push going on. A guy came up to me on the street the other day who I like very much, a sort of goo-goo good government guy, always on the right side. And he said, can I put up a sign on your lawn? And I said, yes, because we have a big question here about whether we should have an improved high school building, which I'm all for. And I said, yes, and he took out this anti-gambling sign. I said, sorry, I feel that way, but I'm not putting that up. Amazing.
So, no signs on the Shartok lawn. We're going to go over to a break in just a second. But Ken, when you look at the sort of as a region, and this goes back to the initial question that I asked, in covering this beat, would you say that how would you characterize the governor's campaign as it is right now? Does it seem very reactionary? Did the Ebola announcement in New York City a week ago, did that put it off the rails at all?
I think it's been a non-campaign campaign as far as actually doing the things you expect candidates to do. The governor has taken the Rose Garden strategy and put it on steroids. I mean, he's barely done anything. I know he's going to do a statewide tour, at the end of the week here, but to wrap it up, but he's done very little, and he's tried to make himself look, hey, I'm just doing my job, I'm working. The Ebola thing was, you know, for the insiders, the Ebola thing looked really bad, that he was shifting positions, you know, he was with de Blasio on, you know, and never mentioning the idea of quarantines, and then he appears with Chris Christie, and then he's talking about quarantines, and then he goes back with de Blasio, and he softens his stance. But the reality is, you know, a poll came out, a Marist poll, that shows something like 80% support what he's doing with it, or 67% support, you know, how he's handling it and support quarantines. So, you know, I don't think he really cares, and we've seen this. He doesn't care what the insiders think. He's playing an end game to appeal as best he can to the voters, and whether that's quarantines or the women's issues and the attack ads, I mean, that's what he's hoping carries him through.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
No, we're just going to take a break, and we come back, and we can take up right there. We welcome your comments, roundtablewamc.org, roundtablewamc.org, and we will be back with more discussion on midterms and other topics after this. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel, where we welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page, or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Newsman Ray Graff joins us, and Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief and columnist for the New York Daily News, is with us this morning. And it's very nice to have you all here. Happy Halloween! It is. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, I had to cut you off as we went into the news break. Do you remember what you wanted to say? Because I don't know what we were talking about.
Exactly, Joe, I don't.
Okay, nor do I where we were. I apologize. I was going to write it down, but I don't. So let me bring this up because I want to – there was an interesting article in the New York Times today about modern political campaigns homing on their key voters with drone-like precision down to the smallest niche, like Prius-driving single women in Northern Virginia who care about energy issues. They compile hundreds of pieces of data on individuals from party registration to pet ownership to favorite TV shows, and they can reach people through Facebook and Pandora and Twitter and YouTube and cable television. So this data-driven campaign has been a big thing lately, and we have gotten a lot of information and some would say very accurate information. The Times article today says the only problem is now they don't have enough messages for them all. The big data era of politics has left some campaigns drowning in their own sophisticated advances. They simply cannot produce enough new effective messages to keep up with the surgical targeting that the data and analytics would now allow. So with all this,
fascinating.
So there is a thing as such a thing as as too much information, isn't there?
Well, you know, what it proves is that black is white is black, up is down, down is up. So in the Times article, you see this very interesting story about a Virginia Republican firm saying that there isn't enough time, that the art isn't keeping up with the digital world and the ability to do all of this. But think about that. You can target, as you said, Prius driving, environmentally concerned women to vote Republican by creating the right message, even though the Republicans have been the ones who have been stopping the climate change train from getting going. So that is a extraordinary to me.
But can you actually do that? You can target the Prius driving, ecologically concerned woman in Virginia and try to get them to vote Republican, but is it a more valid strategy, and I put this out to both you and Ken, to energize your base where you know you have a good shot of getting that vote, or trying to maybe a 2% shot of changing someone's mind?
Well, I think you always want to expand. I think you always want to expand you know, your potential supporters, you know, if you want a big victory, you know, and it depends what party as well. If you're a Republican in New York, for instance, you need to reach out to non-traditional Republican voters because, you know, the makeup of the electorate just tells you that you can't win without that. If you're a Democrat, like, you know, Governor Cuomo came into the year wanting to beat his father's record of 64%. So you target your message. And really, the governor's been doing that with this Women's Equality Party. You know, they've been targeting people on Facebook and social media and you know, with online ads, you know, trying to get women and attacking, you know, Astorino and trying to get women into the fold. And it looks like it's working because if you look at the polls, you know, the last Siena poll last week showed the governor up among women by 40 points over Astorino, whereas among men, Astorino actually had a slight 2-point lead.
Yeah, so is and everyone sort of has to be in that game, right? I mean, it's what the Cuomo campaign does, is what the Astorino campaign does, and it's what the Hawkins campaign does, and all the others that sort of make up the stew, right?
Well, Obama did it, and, you know, I mean, this is how it is now with the technology. You can, you know, target people with a laser focus.
And you have the ability to lie. I mean, lying is always very good, right?
When in doubt,
just lie.
Yeah.
Lie. The old Pete Seeger song, you know, Calvin Trillin wrote the poem, you know, just when in doubt, lie. Say up is down, down is up. We're for women when we're not. We're for ecology when we're not. We're for saving the earth when we're not. And then there will be a percentage of people who will believe it. They said, well, they couldn't say it if it weren't true. Yes, they can. They just lie.
There's a quote in the Times article about this where from Zach Moffitt, who is a co-founder of Targeted Victory, a Republican technology firm, and says, we know all of this stuff about voters, but because politics is based on a broadcast model, we shove the same three messages down their throat. And which is speaking to your point, Alan, so the ads that you're going to see on TV, especially over this weekend, are going to be those messages just shoved down your throat.
And there's a lot at stake here. It's not as if this is a small game. We have the Koch brothers putting, you know, incredible amounts of money into these campaigns, and a lot of people who have a lot to gain. I mean, you know, let's say you give $5 million to a campaign, but you stand to get back, you know, $1 billion in profits if the policy things go your way. Well, then, you know, it seems like $5 million is a $5 tip to a New York cabbie. It's nothing.
And you know, we're seeing it in New York, you know, for the first time, really. We are seeing this year, you know, an explosion of super PACs funding New York campaigns. And the interesting thing is, you would think it would be funding the gubernatorial race or the attorney general race, but they're not. As a matter of fact, there's been very little spending on those races. You know, but you know, we have a story today. It's they're putting $14 million into the state Senate races. Because, you know, the stakes are high. And so, you know, what does it mean? It means that you're seeing on one side supporting the Republicans, you've got the real estate interests and the hedge fund interests who, you know, care about taxes but also about charter schools. And you have business interests. And they've pumped in the most. They've pumped in a lot of money. Some of them have given $1 million, two of them at least, or three of them have given $1 million to super PACs. You know, and they've pumped in a lot of money. On the other side, you have the state teachers unions and the city teachers unions who have spent about $4 million on behalf of the Democrats. And when you look at what's at stake, you know, next year, you know, the city's rent control laws expire. The state has to decide how and whether to extend them and how. The mayoral control in New York City expires. You know, there's issues of minimum wage and taxation. So there's a lot of issues at stake. And if the Democrats take the Senate, then it's an all-Democratic legislature and all-Democratic state government, all likelihood. And if the Republicans, you know, especially those interest groups I mentioned, the business interests, the real estate interests, you know, they feel that the Republican Senate could at least put the brakes on some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Is it your observation, by the way, that that teachers who have now been so alienated from the governor because of his recent remarks could in some way make the difference in some of these elections?
I think they're working really hard. I mean, they're not. We were talking about lying and targeting audiences. I don't know if you saw that flyer that the teachers' super PAC sent out in Buffalo and a couple of other areas. It contained a woman with a black eye, and it said basically that Mark Grisanti in Buffalo and the two Republicans in the Hudson Valley, they don't want to stop her attacker basically because they don't support the governor's full 10-point women's equality agenda. When in reality, the Republicans in the Senate voted for 9 of the measures, including one that would strengthen orders of protection for domestic violence victims. They didn't want to go along with an abortion plank that would have strengthened the abortion laws. So, but a lot of people, including Democrats, including the Democratic Erie County executive and Governor Cuomo, really took the teachers' unions for task for putting that thing out. But the teachers see this as crucial. They feel that if the Republicans win the Senate, then issues like charter school, the property tax cap, they'll have a less friendly ear in the Senate. They feel if the Democrats take over, a lot of their positions will be heard.
Well, this governor is brilliant, of course, when it comes to strategy. I don't know that it's overall brilliant, but when it comes to political strategy, you can't beat him. And, Ken, one of the things, and Joe and Ray, one of the things that has always been interesting to me is sometime, let's say, take the 9 points that the Republicans were for on the women's equality agenda, and the Democrats voted no. It seems to me, Ken, that what you're saying is they wanted the issue more than they wanted to make the women's issue more than they wanted to win on these other 9 points.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The governor, more or less said it at the time. He said, if the Senate doesn't pass the full 10-point agenda, we'll just use it as a campaign issue. And obviously, he's made, women's issues and women's equality, quote-unquote, the central platform. I mean, so much so that he created a women's equality party that even a lot of women lawmakers are upset about. They feel that, it's kind of condescending that you don't need a strictly women party that's, by the way, being run by almost all men.
And also, right. And also that it's going to clobber the Working Families Party, which, as you indicated before, Cuomo is so mad about because they made him grovel in the great teach-out affair.
Absolutely.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you. roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from the Odyssey Bookshop, South Hadley. Photojournalist Lionel DeLevine will discuss his book, To the Village Square, From Montague to Fukushima, Wednesday, November 5th at 7 p.m., odysseybks.com. Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Local apples, pumpkins, squash, fresh meats and seafood, and Adams Grown Mums, adamsfarms.com. And Hudson Valley Federal Credit Union, a local financial cooperative offering business checking, commercial loans, online banking, and more, hvfcu.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. Alan Chartok is here, newsman Ray Graff, Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief and columnist for the New York Daily News, joining us. And it's a pleasure to have Ken aboard this morning. Alan, I have to say I'm struck by the irony. We have been getting a lot of letters off over the last 2 days that we've talked too much about Ebola, that the midterms are here. There's huge issues at stake. We are robbing those issues by talking only about Ebola, and yet we've spent an hour this morning talking about the midterms, and no one has written us a letter.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Well, either the email is down, and by the way, I would take some issue with you, Joe. I mean, not a single letter. I would take some issue. We couldn't keep up with the Ebola mail. We just couldn't
them
all.
Right.
There were so many. But I think it points out, and Ken may have something to say about this, because he's the Monday columnist, brilliant columnist for the Daily News on state matters. I don't know that anybody cares about what goes on in state government. I don't think they know what goes on. I don't think they know who their people are, and they don't care. And as a result of not caring, they don't write because they're not in the game.
I would tend to agree. I think state government is so important.
Doesn't sound like
you want to. Yeah. State government is so important to so many people's lives, and yet they, no one really follows it. I think upstate people do and actually follow it more. They at least know their representatives than downstate. But the reality is, I'll give you a great example, the Moreland situation. How big a story was that? How important was that? And yet every poll shows like 70% or more of New Yorkers have no idea what it is or what the controversy was.
But
it's true.
Well, we can broaden it out too. I mean, we've been talking about not only the state races, but the congressional races and the issues. I mean, we're talking about midterms. We're talking about what happens, what effect this will have on the state legislature, certainly, but also on the House and the Senate, and just overall, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of caring.
No, well,
Was it Melvin Kosnowski or Alfred E. Newman who said famously, "What me worry?"
Alfred E. Newman, sure.
I think they were the same guy. They always looked like the same guy to me.
And you know, people are focused on their lives. People are focused. I think a lot of the gridlock, a lot of the back and forth, has turned a lot of people off over the years. And you know, people just want to go about their daily lives. You know, and. And I think they're just much more focused on that. And frankly, that's what the politicians are all counting on. You know, they want a sleepy electorate because, you know, they can get away with more.
There is a
profound
an editorial in the New York Times today about the midterms and saying the prospect of a Republican Senate. And they're talking about what life will be like in Congress if Republicans gain control of the Senate in Tuesday's election. And a lot of this has to do with Mitch McConnell, of course, who admitted he would be unable to repeal the Affordable Care Act if Republicans win the Senate next week and he becomes majority leader. That would take 60 votes, he said, and no one thinks Republicans will get that many. Conservatives reacted with anger to what they considered a demonstration of weakness. And on Thursday, Mr. McConnell was forced to backtrack. And the Times makes the point that these two comments are a pretty good indication of what this will be like. It's not just that they are committed to time-wasting obstructionist promises like repeal of health care reform, which everyone knows President Obama would veto, says the Times. The bigger problem is that the party's leaders have continually proved unable to resist pressure from the radical right, which may very well grow in the next session of Congress.
Yes, and the real question is, what will McConnell do, Joe? Will it be that he creates a budget, or the radical Republicans in the House create a budget, and they put all of this junk in there and say, okay, you're not going to get a budget, you can't run the government unless you do what we say. And that is what a lot of people expect to have happen.
Ken?
No, I agree. I think we saw it... there's degrees, especially with the Republicans. We saw it, in previous years where, you know, it was hard to make deals because a handful of Tea Party, congressmen were able to block it, much to the frustration of John Boehner. I mean, there's degrees. I think there's a split within the party itself about how far they can go and anger. And then you've got a president who is going to, veto and block and do things as well.
It's going to be a long 2 years, isn't it?
If the Republicans take the Senate,
if you're Barack Obama, it's going to be a long 2 years. That's for sure.
And honestly, it's a long 2 years, regardless.
Well, that's what I think.
It's not like they're working. We talk about like there's going to be some seismic shift, but the reality is, it's not like it's been working great now anyway.
Yeah, we're not exactly at the gold standard, are we?
Yeah.
And expand a little bit on that, Alan, about as far as tough for the president. I mean, this will be, so people are saying the lamest of the lamest duck. It make it a very difficult time. You indicated hair color earlier that more gray hair for the president over the next 2 years. But as far as the electorate goes, as the American people go, there's not going to be, and I think to Ken's point, either way, there's not going to a whole lot done. We're not going to get a whole lot done.
No, and I think there are times that the American people likes to just take a rest. I think that's part of what's happening. I mean, I'm so old. I lived through the Eisenhower years. I remember it all. Just take it easy. But I think that the resurgence will come in the 2016 presidential election. And I like to think about the lame duck. You know, it's just not one leg of the duck now. It's two.
Well, if it happens, it hasn't happened yet. And it's nothing new if it does, except for the, second term of Clinton and one term of Bush. This happens a lot. This has happened. This goes back to Truman. So it's really nothing new here.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. But I think to Ken's point that either way, you know, we haven't exactly been living in the, you know, even with the Senate and Democratic control, we haven't had a lot getting done anyway.
And you would also think that if the Republicans control both houses, and as Alan says, you know, 2016 is going to be big in terms of, you know, it's been 8 years of a Democrat in the White House. The Republicans obviously want to take it back. They're going to want to show that they can work.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a Senate and a House that can't get along and can't get stuff done, it's going to play into the Democrats' hands for 2016. So they're going to want to try and play nice and I would think, and try to make it look like, hey, look, as when the Republicans control things, you know, we're starting to get stuff done.
Well, Ken, I hope you're right. I suspect you're not, because exactly for the reason Joe was articulating before, or you are, and that is that as soon as they try to do anything that resembles responsible government, they're going to hear from their radical right, who's going to be furious, and that's going to stymie them there right there.
Well, we are out of time, but I want to thank everybody for being a part of the program this morning. Ken, thank you very much for being here. It was really nice to have you. I know you're busy and you have an event to cover in just a few moments, so I thank you very much for taking the time out. I appreciate it.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. Alan, be well. Ray, thank you very much. Happy Halloween.
And ditto.
And tonight is the Berkshire Ramblers.
Berkshire Ramblers at Cafe Lena. Are tickets still available?
Well, I think there are a few.
Okay, just a few. CafeLena.com, two Fs on the cafe. CafeLena.org or com? Org? I think org.
Show prep.
Thank you.